It's not even work, it's pleasure. And to see people, see children and people that have been in pain or suffering or wondering and in confusion, and help them to get clear. I mean, I that's my passion.
I understand.
So thank you for allowing me to be on your show for a couple of hours.
God bless you, Michael, and we'll be talking to you soon. You have an incredible weekend.
Take care.
Bye now.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
Wells Fargo will pay $1 billion to federal regulators to settle charges tied to its mortgage and auto lending business. In the settlement announced today, Wells will pay $500 million to the Office of Comptroller of Currency and $500 million to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. OMB Director Mick Mulvaney says the fine was the right thing to do.
We thought that Wells had misbehaved and broken the law, quite frankly, and that was what gave rise to this action.
The DNC filed a multi-million-dollar lawsuit today against the Russian government, the Trump campaign, and WikiLeaks, alleging a conspiracy between the three entities to disrupt the 2016 presidential campaign in order to get Donald Trump elected. Currently, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down right around 175 points, with 1 hour of trading left on the week. For all of these stories and more, please check out usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
For some reason, being unpatriotic has become a trend as a way to protest perceived injustices in our country. But true patriots understand that America stands for liberty and justice for all. Standing for the flag and our national anthem is a sign of respect for the liberties and freedoms fought for by millions who made the ultimate sacrifice for this great nation. If you stand for the flag and kneel before the cross, show your position through apparel and merchandise from the Patriot Depot. Patriot Depot has hats, shirts, mugs, books, and other articles that show our beliefs in the First and Second Amendments. Go to PatriotDepot.com now and enter code USA at checkout. Find novelties, bumper stickers, clothing, flags, books, and more. PatriotDepot.com merchandise allows true patriots to express their opinions. Check it out right now. PatriotDepot.com. PatriotDepot.com and enter code USA at checkout.
What was called a caravan of migrants trekking through Mexico looked more like a line of people when it reached the U.S. border. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the latest.
The U.S. government reportedly monitoring what's now just a small group of migrants escaping Honduras, Costa Rica, and El Salvador, among other Latin American countries. There were about 1,500 migrants in the caravan when it began heading north about a month ago from southern Mexico, but by the time it reached the border at Tijuana Wednesday, there were only 50 left. The caravan's come under fire from President Trump for weeks. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
President Donald Trump blasted the oil-producing cartel OPEC on Twitter today, saying, quote, "Looks like OPEC is at it again. With record amounts of oil all over the place, including fully loaded ships at sea, oil prices are artificially high, very high. Oil prices hit a three-year high at over $69 a barrel and currently are still trading above $68 a barrel today." This is USA Radio News.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
Thumbing their nose at a 20% pay raise from Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, the Arizona teachers voted to walk off the job April 26. A spokesman for the Arizona Teachers Association says they have the support of the community, families, and teachers.
Educators have delivered a strong message tonight and overwhelmingly support walking out of their schools for their students and their communities and their colleagues.
Lawsuits are expected after this week's deadly airline incident. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has that story.
Passengers aboard the Southwest Airlines flight that suffered the explosion of an engine and the death of one of those passengers have been praising the pilot of the plane for how she conducted herself and landed it safely in Philly. But lawyers say survivors, including the crew, will likely be filing claims. The Clifford Law Offices, which has been involved in every commercial aviation disaster since the 1970s, says even those who were not physically injured could have a claim because of post-traumatic stress. The firm says it believes passengers will be able to sue despite the fact Southwest has sent them a $5,000 check along with a letter of apology and a $1,000 travel voucher for use in the future. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
And finally, mourners are continuing to line up at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Houston, Texas, where they are paying their final respects to former First Lady Barbara Bush. For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We are in an era where we are constantly bickering. We have those on the right who are angry. We have those on the left who are angry. We are going back and forth. We seem to talk past one another constantly. We have our own websites. We have our own social media. We have essentially our own dedicated cable channels. And it's a very difficult time to patch things up. Some people, however, are trying, and Sally Cohn is one of them. We're going to be speaking to her today. Her new book is The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
How did we arrive at this low state? I mean, we can talk about Donald Trump, but it really started before then, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know. I have some theories of how we got here, right? It has it's about a combination of the nature of the media environment that we're in, the political environment. Like, politics in modern the last 50 or 60 years have actually deliberately stoked anger and animosity among people as a turnout strategy. Both parties have done it. The Republicans have done it a bit more and made it a core strategy to, you know, stoke hatred and fear and resentment. The media took on a lot of that, both because of changes in policy and because of more competition. They saw they could, look, they now they need more audiences more, and one way to get audiences more is to have more fights. So there's that too, and then of course this all happens in the context of the fact that we're have a pretty hateful history as a country. It's not like hate, divisiveness, otherizing is anything new to us.
No, that's a very good point. It unfortunately, I think, comes to us kind of naturally, and there really hasn't been, I don't think, any single moment where we've stepped back, looked at ourselves, examined what we've done, and thought about what do we really do. I mean, maybe the '60s came close, but it wasn't a really thoroughgoing moment where, for example, like in South Africa, you had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Sure.
I think we almost need that in the United States, but where do you start? Because there's so many issues on which you could begin that.
Well, even just having that conversation is interesting because it acknowledges that we have the residue and scars of the hate in our past that are still impacting us as people and as a country today. And so if we get to the point of then saying, okay, what do we do about it? How do we move forward? At least we've acknowledged that's a reality and a problem, whereas we're still honestly fighting over that. There are a lot of people who want to say, like, look, that's the past. It doesn't matter now. But when you look at the inequity in our schools and our communities and in policing and in wealth and in home ownership and at every single layer, and you see those inequities play out by race, by gender, by immigration status, by religion, by sexuality, you know that is because that residue of hate has left its thumbprint on our society and all of us.
We're speaking with Sally Cohn. She's the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. It's all well and good for you and I to sit here, Sally, and talk about, you know, what we ought to do and what we have to acknowledge. But as you alluded to a moment ago, there are plenty of people who don't acknowledge that there's even really an issue to begin with. How do we approach folks like that?
Well, I think the key thing is first to talk to people in a way that doesn't stop them listening. And, you know, look, and I'm not telling people what to do. I'm saying what personally for me works and what I've found to be my own journey. And if you are in a situation with someone where you feel politically confrontational with them or ideologically, or, you know, obviously people have to make choices that are about their own safety, their own self-care. So, you know, one option is certainly to just not engage. If you are going to engage, if you do feel like you can engage, I think it's important to engage in ways that people can hear you. Because when we just start yelling at people, and when we just start trying to, you know, attack their opinion with our opinion, or worse, when we start to actually attack them as people, when we make it personal, then they, not only is that mean, but they don't listen. People don't listen because people don't like being told they're stupid or they're hateful or they're this or they're that. So at the very least, beginning things in a, trying to have conversations that at a core, at a base, have mutual respect and respect for each other's humanity is critical.
I don't know if you found this personally in your experience, but one thing that has guided me when I have attempted to do this sort of thing is when you're trying to engage someone that you may differ from significantly politically, culturally, etc., don't do it online. It is much easier not to listen online. It's just structurally so much more difficult to get through to someone, and I find that all the conversations that I have had in person, directly, engage the humanity. People are more polite in person. People like can see your person with a face and a body and a real human being, and that means something. It's significant to people, even if we don't think about it.
That's true. Sure. And one of the things I cover in the book is some of the research on why it is that technology, social media can be inherently dehumanized. However, there's also examples of how people have reached across differences, shown kindness, generosity, humanity in the face of cruelty in ways online that have radically transform people and help them move away from extreme hate. And the truth is, the book's called The Opposite of Hate, and the opposite of hate to me isn't love. You don't have to love people to not hate them. You just have to not hate them. And what the antidote really is connection. Because when you know people, when you have experienced your mutual humanity, it is harder to hate them. And one of the things that's amazing about the internet and amazing about social media is that it brings us this potential to know and care more about and understand wider circles of people than we may have in our own homes, our own schools, our own workplaces. That's also a potentially great tool for fighting hate. It depends on how we use it.
Well, I guess then that even if it means spending more time on Facebook or Twitter, I'm going to have to reread that section of the book and give it a little extra effort, because I suppose there are only so many people that I can reach in person, and it's important to keep as many connections in digital and analog both. We've been speaking with Sally Cohn. She is the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, thank you so much for being with us and for making this effort. All the best.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
Credit products are made by WebBank. Rates and terms vary based on credit history. Amazon is not a sponsor of this promotion. Other restrictions apply. See website for details.
How did I get into credit card debt? A trip to the emergency room.
Car repairs.
Moving expenses.
There's a million ways to get into credit card debt, but one sure way to start getting out. Avant. Avant offers access to online unsecured loans from $2,000 to $35,000 at competitive rates and no extra charges for paying back early. Over 500,000 customers have experienced the convenience of a loan through Avant. No wonder Avant has an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. The application takes minutes, and if approved by 4:30 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, funds are deposited as soon as the next business day. And now Avant will also give you a $50 Amazon.com gift card after your first payment is made on time. To check your loan options and to get this special radio offer, go to Avant.com today and enter promo code 6060 when applying. That's AVANT.com, promo code 6060. Avant.com, code 6060.
This report is brought to you by Esurance. A national survey of more than 1,000 U.S. drivers reveals a surprising disparity between attitudes and behavior when it comes to distracted driving. The survey was commissioned by Esurance to better understand why people get distracted when they're behind the wheel. One worrying finding is that more than 90% of those surveyed believe that texting while driving is not a good idea, but more than half of daily commuters continue to do it anyway. Stephanie Braun is the director of the Connected Car at Esurance.
Despite the fact that fatalities related to distracted driving are on the rise, the survey tells us that drivers are willing to take the risk and continue to give in to the lure of using technology while driving. We're seeing more automakers try to address the issue of distracted driving through semi-autonomous features, but nearly a third of drivers with in-car safety tech believe warning sounds and alerts can be distracting as well.
For more information, visit www.esurance.com. That's www.esurance.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you in business, not a member of the Chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. I have always been fascinated by the English language and, in particular, by British mannerisms of speech. Perhaps I have a little bit of Henry Higgins in me. Well, we're going to dig deeper on that front today. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of the blog Separated by a Common Language and the book The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn Murphy, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. So what was your first experience as an American encountering the Queen's English in its native land?
In its native land? Well, it was just 18 years ago. I moved to England to take a job at the University of Sussex, and that was my first time in England. There was all of my worldly belongings moving there to stay. But I had lived in South Africa for 4 years before that and had started to learn some of the lingo.
And I suppose it's a separate question. What's the difference between the lingo in South Africa, let alone the accent, versus England? But what did you notice as an American? What did you most experience difficulty or at least shake your head a little bit at when you first started speaking with folks on a regular basis there?
Well, I think once you really live in a culture rather than just being a tourist in it, you have a lot of administrative vocabulary that you need. A lot of, the bureaucracies
right.
are all different.
Right.
So you do a lot of learning what the terms are for different departments that you need to talk to and different documents you need to have and boring
right.
stuff like that. South Africa has got some of its own lingo. So, for instance, a traffic light is a robot. There,
oh, wow.
And there's some other fun things coming from other languages there and a lot of different accents. So I was, in South Africa they use British spelling and they use a lot of the words like biscuit instead of cookie or pavement instead of sidewalk or things like that. So those kinds of things I was prepared for, but there were also a lot of differences.
I know that there are a lot of transplants on both sides of the Atlantic, especially between New York and London, a lot of professional exchange, certainly between those cities at the very least. Do you think that there is more of a language shock for an American coming to England or for a Brit coming to New York? And what are their respective experiences in, as far as you've been able to tell?
Well, I think British people hear a lot more American voices than Americans hear of British voices. So there's a lot more American TV, a lot more American music playing there than vice versa. So they come expecting to be able to communicate fairly well and, of course, knowing some of the lingo already. But I'm sure they're surprised by a lot of the things that they don't know. I've been doing a difference of the day on Twitter since 2009. And I mostly do a different difference every day. You know, I've done thousands of differences. You know, so you will just keep learning more and more and more the longer you live in one of these places.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. You are married to a Brit. Are there still moments where one of you doesn't know what the other one is talking about?
Yes. I mean, some of it, I think, is down to stubbornness at this point. But
I know that's true of my wife and me, and we both speak American.
Yesterday he was complaining about, you know, when he asked me a question, you know, do you want to do this? And I say, sure. And he'll say, I don't know what sure means. I'm like, I've told you 1,000 times it means yes. But he takes it as, you know, resisting. So, you know, those kinds of little interactional things, the way that British people and American people make suggestions can be a bit different. And so, he can sort of bristle at me sounding a bit bossy compared to how he'd want to put things. So, you know, there's those kinds of things. But, you know, we're aware of them. We get past it.
Well, that's an interesting observation there. To what extent are those cultural attitudes embedded in the language, or are they just a product of the language more than the culture? I suppose in a way it's a chicken and egg question. Are Brits really hyper polite, and are Americans really bossy and rude? I mean,
you can't really judge it that way,
right?
Because what sounds bossy in America doesn't sound bossy in Britain and vice versa. You know, so nothing in the language is inherently bossy. It's what you're used to hearing and the conditions you're used to hearing it in make things seem bossy. So, for example, British people say please a lot more than Americans do, at least twice as much more. And they do it in situations where Americans wouldn't say please, because Americans tend to say please for pleading, for sounding desperate or sounding bossy. So in ordering things in a restaurant, for example, an American will say, I'll have the something, and the British will say, please may I have something.
Right.
And it's not that the British is necessarily more polite. It's just the way they do it. On the other hand, Americans say thank you about twice as much as British people do. So we're both doing polite things. We're just doing them in different ways. An example of that would be, if you offer me a piece of cake, in America I might say, yes, thank you. But in Britain I'd have to say, yes, please. So we're using the same words for slightly different effects, but we're all being polite in the way we know how to be polite.
I know my wife and I are certainly among them, but there are many in the United States who are Anglophiles, who watch a lot of British television, who listen to the BBC radio with some degree of frequency. How much of that do you think is a result, I'm sure it varies from person to person, of these little linguistic differences and those being just kind of moments of pleasure and a pleasant disorientation, so to speak?
I think people really enjoy that kind of thing, but I think we have especially more patience for it or enjoyment of it when it's British. You know, there's this sort of idea of Britain as being cool or as being educated or as being lots of other things. So, you know, we do, those of us who like to watch things from different places do enjoy that aspect of it. You always learn a little bit. You always wonder a little bit when you watch something and they're using different words. But I just noticed that we do that a lot with British, but we don't seem to do it as with, say, you know, New Zealand or Canada. Even,
right.
You know, there's
right.
a certain cachet that Britain has for Americans.
So having lived there for a while, tell us the truth. Are they cooler and more educated?
No.
Okay. Drat.
That's the thing that you have to get used to is that, you know, British people are just people. And, you know, the education, the picture that we get of Britain in America is usually sort of upper-class Britain. You know, if you watch Downton Abbey or
right.
if you watch Sherlock or if you listen to BBC broadcasters, you know, you're not hearing people on the street talk. You're hearing a sort of upper refined kind of speech that comes from certain schools and certain places. Whereas, you know, in everyday life, there's a huge variety of ways that people speak and a huge variety of personalities and a huge variety of levels of education and intelligence, just like in America.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Hi, Mike. This is Joanne. We're from Lansing, Michigan. And
we love our Ring video doorbell.
Yeah, it was a gift.
From my sister.
Right.
Anyway, let me tell you our story. I was doing laundry in the basement, and Lily, our daughter, just wandered out the front door.
Right, you were at home. I was at work, and I get the alert on my phone from Ring. From the front door, I can see on live video, our daughter is walking out towards the street. But we both got notifications. Here, listen.
Lily, what are you doing, sweetheart? Get inside.
Get back inside.
Get back inside!
I mean, it's like I was there. I mean, without being there.
I'm Jamie Siminoff, and stories like this are exactly why I started Ring. Join Mike, Joanne, and the millions of your neighbors who love Ring. So go to ring.com/America and receive a special offer on the Ring video doorbell. That's ring.com/America.
USA Radio News.
Wells Fargo will pay $1 billion to federal regulators to settle charges tied to its mortgage and auto lending business. In the settlement announced today, Wells will pay $500 million to the Office of Comptroller of Currency and $500 million to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. OMB Director Mick Mulvaney says the fine was the right thing to do.
We thought that Wells had misbehaved and broken the law, quite frankly, and that was what gave rise to this action.
The DNC filed a multi-million-dollar lawsuit today against the Russian government, the Trump campaign, and WikiLeaks, alleging a conspiracy between the three entities to disrupt the 2016 presidential campaign in order to get Donald Trump elected. Currently, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down right around 175 points with 1 hour of trading left on the week. For all of these stories and more, please check out usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Next. You're holding up the line, ma'am.
What did you say?
You're next in line for the water slide, ma'am. Feet forward and enjoy the ride.
Okay, dearie. This does look fun. You've melted me. I've melted.
The Wicked Witch of the West on a water slide? Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to Geico.
See what you've done. Oh!
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers' rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Now that you've lived for quite a while in England yourself, how many aspects of British English have you adapted into your personal mode of speech?
Well, I like to say that my accent lives in Atlantis because I mean, I was mistaken for British the other day in Ithaca, New York. So, you know, it's because I pronounce my T's rather more crisply than I used to. Right. I just said rather more. That sounded pretty British.
Right.
Some of my vowels are sort of halfway between, and there are a lot of words that I've just come to say in the British way, either because I want to be understood, so I have, you know, it's easier to get my sandwich if I say tomato rather than tomato when I order it.
Right.
But also because sometimes the argument that ensues if I use the Americanism is just too much to bear.
Right.
Or not the argument, the mockery. So, you know, something like, I'll say herb now instead of herb for things like parsley, because if I don't, I have to go through a whole spiel with whoever.
You have to identify yourself. Where do you come from? The whole conversation. You're obliged almost to a 2-minute conversation under the best of circumstances.
Yeah, and it's often, you know, you Americans, why do you say it that way? Why do you say it wrong?
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, I don't want to get into that because it's not wrong. It's just American.
Exactly. So to smooth the way, you kind
the
of
situation.
Do it. Right, right. How many of these differences have we picked up and adapted? I notice especially, it seems to me that there are a few, and no specific ones occur to me now, but there are certain British modes of speech that have been adapted, especially in big cities among younger folks in the U.S., and I'm sure that must be the case on the other side of the pond as well. How much is that happening that you notice?
Well, it happens all the time. It happens much more in the America to Britain direction because of that exposure to American television and such. But also, there are a lot more Americans than there are Brits, you know. So there's more language, more American language being heard in the world these days than British. So a lot goes over there, and there's a lot of backlash to it. When British words come over to America, either they're seen as something a little bit pretentious, you know, they'll be cool in some circles but not others, so to say a queue rather than standing on the line, or to use the sort of super British words like gobsmacked.
Yes.
That's sort of cute. Other things just come in under the radar. So, you know, for instance, in the 2008 elections, all of a sudden people were vetting candidates and vetting people for the Supreme Court, and that was something that came over from British racing slang. And I don't think most people who started using the word knew or started reading the word knew that it was coming over from Britain, or when children suddenly started going missing instead of vanishing. I don't think most people realized that was coming over from Britain. But there are lots of things that do that.
I don't think that a whole lot of people prior to the, at least I remember it from 2003, and it's sort of recurred in the wake of the controversies surrounding President Trump, that the word dossier much came up in American English. But I certainly remember that being around a lot in the media for the first time around the lead up to the Iraq war, given the dossier that was compiled by the Blair government, and then again with regard to Christopher Steele. That in particular seems to be a Britishism, or a more frequently heard word in British, at any rate. So there certainly is a lot of that that interaction.
Yeah, you get a lot of that, I think, because the media is very mixed. You know, British media people and you know, the reporters who are working in Washington, they're all mixing. And right. they're getting information from each other, and so it's really easy for information and for words to pass that way.
Absolutely. And one of our other guests this week is Catty Kay, and she is a prime example of that cross-filtration. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. I suppose another product of the mass media may be that the number of differences between the two branches of the mother tongue have been reduced. Have you noticed that over the course of your exposure to British English?
Well, I think the British press is very sensitive about this point, that American words are coming over and that there's not going to be a difference anymore. And, you know, there's some of that. There's, you know, if you speak in business speak, you know, there's a lot that goes back and forth between the two, and there's a lot of influence of American business speak on British business and that sort of thing. At the same time, when words come over from one place to another, they very often change. And so, for example, fries, French fries, has gone over to right. Britain. And, you know, people say, oh, but we say chips. Except if you look at what people do with the word fries there, they only use it for the skinny kind like you'd get at McDonald's. And the ones that are more traditional British ones are chips. And so you can see the language specializing when it moves and doing interesting things.
Do you suppose that UKIP will advocate a limit on the number of American words that can enter the country at any point in the near future?
UKIP is interesting because, of course, they started as an anti-Europe organization. So they sometimes sort of try to show allegiance to America, and especially to certain brands of politics right. in America. And I loved UKIP had they had a demonstration, and there was a man holding a poster that said, UKIP wants you, and it had a picture of Uncle Sam on it. And I don't know if they're coming or going, you know, right. from their relationship with America.
Well, I'm not sure either, given that their former leader, Nigel Farage, has probably one of the most recognizably French names imaginable. So
yeah, and his wife is German or Russian or something like that. So, they're a funny group.
Yes, they are. And you know, two funny languages, and but I do revel in the difference, you know, let alone, and there's a whole different set of subjects we can get into with accent alone, and it's something else that I'm sure, having lived in other Commonwealth countries, that you notice as well. But the wording and the phrasing is something that I've always been fascinated with, and I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of flesh that out with us today. We've been speaking with Lynn Murphy, again, author of the blog Separated by a Common Language, and also the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Can you remember the last time you had a great night's sleep? How you felt the next morning? More energized, more alive. Feel the difference of deeper sleep daily with the new Tomorrow mattress. Designed by the world's leading sleep experts at Serta Simmons Bedding and delivered right to your door. Use promo code HAPPY for up to $250 in savings when purchasing a mattress, foundation, and sleep protector. That's tomorrowsleep.com promo code HAPPY.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count.
So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 6565 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 6565.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Jessica, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the open road, it used to be something that Americans aspired to, getting out there, traveling across the country, traveling in an RV, maybe even living in one. It seemed to be a promise of freedom. But your investigation that you conducted and written up in this book really seems to be the opposite. It seems to be what people are doing on the way down as opposed to doing on the way up.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I saw an RV, back before I started working on this book project, I assumed that the occupants were probably the last of the great pensioners, you know, enjoying their golden years on some secure savings and, you know, going to see everything from Old Faithful to Niagara Falls and just, you know, writing postcards along the way. And it just seemed like this really just charmed existence. And while those people, by all means, are still out there, they've been joined by a whole new group of folks who have really been battered around by the economy, particularly in a society where we still have, you know, $7.25 is our federal minimum wage and housing costs keep going up. And for a lot of people, that's put them in a pretty untenable situation, for which going mobile has, you know, has kind of been the valve that releases some of the pressure.
I certainly see people in my neck of the woods, and I live in southern Oregon, who use RVs or trailers as basically their in-law unit. I mean, this is their plan for retirement or to help their parents. And I think it seems to me that's something born of economic necessity. Also, how have some of the people that you've talked to made the decision that I can't afford a home anymore, and this is what I'm going to do instead?
Yeah, I mean, the stories are as unique as the people themselves, but for a lot of people, for a lot of people in general, 2008 was a wake-up call. But for people in particular who are on the brink of retirement and suddenly faced, without having time to make it up, losing their savings, possibly losing their 401ks, losing the equity in their homes that they plan to retire on, it was really a particularly dire blow. So I met people out on the road who had, again, lost all of those things, and some of them had pretty high-profile jobs during their main careers, and I also met people who had been caught on a low-wage treadmill and had never been able to put away enough to retire. And, you know, meanwhile, we live in a culture where pensions have been replaced with 401ks. In the 80s, 401ks were cynically marketed as instruments of financial freedom, while really taking the risk off of the shoulders of the employer and moving it over to the worker. And I think that's been kind of a disaster. So we've got all these factors that have people getting out on the road from different economic strata.
We're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. You know, what is day-to-day life like for these folks? And is it actually less expensive than what the alternatives are?
I believe it can be less expensive. People envision that folks living this lifestyle are constantly in motion. And that's actually not true. Often it's about getting to where you need to be and staying there for a while. Often they drive less than commuters in urban areas do. So for many people, you know, there are thousands of employers who hire these folks over the country, from Amazon hiring them to do warehouse work, which can involve walking 15 miles on a concrete floor on a day, to Texas oil fields that hire them as gate guards, to the annual sugar beet harvest that helps, that hires them to work as ground crew, shoveling beets and doing some other pretty tough work in on 12-hour shifts, to campgrounds and national parks all over the country. So that's where you'll find these people is doing these jobs. They are tough jobs. They typically do not pay very well. However, they are one small area of the workforce in which ageism does not seem to be a factor. They are taking all warm bodies and all comers. So a lot of people are working those jobs, and when they're not, they are going financially dormant the best they can. Sometimes they're on public lands where they can camp for free or cheap. Often I see people using solar panels to generate their own electricity because the cost of that technology has come down so incredibly within recent years and put it within reach of a very wide audience. So that's some of the stuff that they're up to.
You know, I hate to draw the parallel, but it kind of seems like you've created a latter-day version of the Grapes of Wrath here. I mean, there's basically a motorized itinerant a class that's burgeoning in America, and that it seems on the face of it that it can't be good.
I think it's pretty challenging, and one of the big differences between these folks who are out on the road now related to economic circumstances and people who were out in the aftermath of the Great Depression, in my mind, is the post-Depression folks always envisioned reintegrating with mainstream society. So everybody was just figured, you know, this is a temporary anomaly. Things are going to get better, and I'll be back in. And meanwhile, today, I don't think people believe that the cavalry is going to come, that things are going to change, that what is starting to feel like a long emergency, you know, in everything from our economy to the climate to just the overarching situation of, you know, how we're going to make it in the world. I don't think people feel like we're going to return to the old quo. I think the idea that we might seems quite foreign to them. So most of the people I met were really planning to do this for the long haul. And that was something that surprised me, but it makes sense now.
It's really incredible. Maybe it's more akin to Mad Max than it is to the Grapes of Wrath. Because I mean, well, yeah, what is the? I mean, what's
the Grapes
what,
of Meth?
The Grapes of Meth. Like, what's the ultimate end here? I mean, how does somebody live out their life in a situation where at some point they're not going to be able to drive? And if we are, as a society, and hopefully our leaders, realizing that there is a growing group of people who are turning to this because there's no economic alternative, like, what are we going to end up with? A bunch of people driving around, filling the roads and with, fires in oil barrels to light the chiaroscuro. I mean, what's the end game here?
Oh, I wish I knew what the end game was, but I think the trend will continue to grow, and I also think the crackdown on it is going to keep growing. Right now, we have a widespread wave of what people are worriedly referring to as the criminalization of homelessness. There's also been a crackdown in the national parks. I just got another email yesterday talking about how people who live full-time in their vehicles are being hustled off the land and sometimes not even given the rights that, you know, every person visiting this public land is entitled to in terms of staying there, which is upsetting to me. And at the same time, you know, places where these people gather, I started hanging out with them in 2013, and the numbers are just swelling. The numbers are absolutely swelling. And, you know, there's an interest in the whole tiny house movement and chic minimalism, but people never talk about the fact that economic factors actually may be shaping even those factors. Hmm. And I think there's a lot more of that going on than we realize.
This is an outcropping of a larger problem, which is that we don't have affordable housing in this country, and certainly in places like the San Francisco mm-hmm. Bay Area, where there are people working for enormous companies and often well-paid people who are in the situation that still can't afford basic housing.
Yeah, I met people who were pushed out of the Bay Area when I believe they were in like the manufactured housing park, and you know that was swept away for luxury condos, and suddenly those people were living in a van because there was really nowhere else they could afford.
Yeah,
I met a guy also from the Bay Area who had been a San Francisco cab driver for many years, planned to retire on the value of his medallion, but got pushed out by Uber, found his medallion was no longer worth a dime, and is also living in a van. So it's really quite striking to see the situations that have gotten these people out on the road.
Yeah, I just maybe Tom Joad is out there somewhere, and maybe before he loses the ability to keep driving, he and a few other folks in a similar situation can get together and do something about it, because ultimately, I don't know if there's any other alternative. Jessica Bruder, she is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Thank you so much for talking with us about this, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for caring about these people and their stories.
Happy trails. Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com, follow us on Twitter at nowitsthenews, and until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy trails!
Are you enjoying this latest stock market roller coaster ride? You've worked too long.
USA Radio News.
Students in Florida, Colorado, and Washington, D.C. joined more than 2,700 planned walkouts coast to coast today, marking the 19th anniversary of the Columbine High School shooting in an effort to push for stronger national gun control. A student in Atlanta, Georgia, explains why she is protesting.
Gun violence, we want reforms, we want bills, we want dialogue to be able to start the process of making positive change so we don't have to see any more tragedies within school systems and public institutions or anywhere.
Jurors got a look today at Bill Cosby's travel records as his lawyers made the case that he never visited his suburban Philadelphia mansion in the month he is accused of drugging and molesting a woman there. Cosby is charged with 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault. He's saying these sexual encounters were consensual. For all of these stories, remember, please check us out online at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Posting your job opening to an online job search site is like drinking from a fire hose. You get more resumes than you know what to do with. Robert Half is the better way to hire. Our candidates are interviewed and custom matched to your exact hiring requirements. Quickly, satisfaction guaranteed. So what you need is just what you'll get. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
Hey, moms and dads. There's a new True Blue American Hero in theaters now.
In fact, I thought of a name for him.
His name is Stubby.
Sergeant Stubby, an American Hero, is a heartwarming animated adventure for the whole family based on the incredible true story of America's most decorated dog.
I confer the honorary rank of sergeant on Stubby, the regimental mascot.
You could all learn something from him.
Now playing in theaters nationwide. Go see it today.
Republicans hope to advance Mike Pompeo's nomination as Secretary of State next week. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
President Trump tapped the CIA chief to replace fired Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, but Mike Pompeo's confirmation is not a sure thing. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee will vote on the nomination late Monday. It's expected to be a tight vote. Most Democrats oppose Pompeo, questioning whether he has the diplomatic credentials for the job, and Kentucky Republican Rand Paul says he's still on the fence. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Wells Fargo will pay $1 billion to federal regulators to settle charges tied to its mortgage and auto lending business. In the settlement announced today, Wells will pay $500 million to the Office of Comptroller of Currency and $500 million to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And finally, mourners are continuing to line up at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Houston, Texas, where they are paying their final respects to former First Lady Barbara Bush. This is USA Radio News.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may